You're listening to a Mint podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi, I'm Shovik Das. I'm Leslie DeMonte.
And I'm Deepthi Ahuja. You're listening to Mint Etc.,
a podcast where we will talk about important developments in technology and how they will transform our lives, work, and play as we know it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Mint Etc. podcast. This is our first episode for 2024. And as you would probably realize from the thumbnail, which is if you see the thumbnail, is that we have kind of rejigged a few things. We have more of us hosting the podcast now. Joining alongside me is my boss and mentor, Leslie DeMonte. And as chief of our podcast, the very scary and the very frightening Deepthi Ahuja.
Thank you, Shavik. You have been very, very generous with your comments.
Absolutely, I agree.
I am indeed. And we are here to talk about, we're starting the year and this is a tech podcast. And, you know, if you wake up in the morning and Google tech news today, anyone, anything that's there on the internet is about the Consumer Electronics Show. CES has, of course, been a big, very important event historically in the overall consumer electronics world. And this year, it's a lot of AI, a lot of automotive technologies, and even a lot of enterprise technologies. So we are going to be talking about that. But before we begin into, you know, whatever's fun and whatever's boring at CES, Leslie, you have seen CES since decades. How have you seen things evolve at CES? Is it still cool enough or has the shine kind of gone back?
Yeah, I've been covering CES for more than a decade. And I would say that, okay, over a period of time, it has lost that kind of, you know, the mojo that it had, or the prima donna effect that it really had, because there are many other events that have equally vying for attention. One is that, of course, all the tech companies also have their own big tech events, which are sort of as good a draw as that of CES. So CES actually has to battle it out each and every time. And I think historically also, you know, CES has been more talking about consumer electronics, you know, the whole world has moved towards the industrial part of it. And in fact, actually, if you look at the CES this year, clearly it has gone into, it starts with Roland Busch's keynote on the industrial metaverse, of course. So this is just, you know, I feel that CES could be a lot more. But, you know, just given that there's just too much of tech around, it's hard for any one event to be the sole kind of event out here.
Right, absolutely. Deepthi, it'll be interesting to hear from you, in fact, what you think of CES, because unlike us, you have better things to do in life instead of just...
Well, honestly, I feel like nervous, like a rookie on this podcast with the two of you hosting it. And I'm quite afraid of how things might turn out and how bad, I mean, an impression do Mint Etc. listeners get of me, one of the producers of this podcast.
For the record, we are not so bad. We are quite nice in general.
But considering the fact that I've recently, in the past couple of years, been introduced to CES, I did not know of it before I started handling tech podcasts, to be very honest. And I must also say that when I was doing my fair bit of research before coming to, you know, record this episode, I realized that there were so many other channels that were covering CES and that had better views than the CES channel on YouTube. So I think it's more, apart from the fact that other tech companies have also started doing their own big shows, it's also about the marketing strategy. I would say CES needs to boost that strategy for the common consumer to be able to be excited about CES, I would say.
Yeah, Deepthi, but you know, also, I mean, to be fair, I mean, CES has been the face of consumer tech. So, I mean, I think there's no doubt about that. Yeah.
True, but I mean, we are in a digital world and then there are digital marketing strategies. And I think the visibility there seems to be a little, I would say, is dwindling a little bit. So it should concentrate on those parts as well.
CES
folk. Gary Shapiro must be hearing this. We should reach out to Gary Shapiro with Deepthi's competence.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
But, you know, CES always has cool things. I mean, that's undeniable even now. And in fact, yesterday, I happened to see LG launching this wireless transparent TV. I don't know if we really need our TVs to be transparent, you know. I mean,
what exactly do they mean by a transparent TV? You can see through the TV?
Yes, you can see through the TV. It's translucent, to be honest.
It will be translucent.
But, you know, transparent sounds better, I think, as a marketing... you know, no wires. You can just look through the screen. I don't know if we really need it. But do we need it?
Yeah, but... No, but look through the screen and see what? I thought we wanted to see a movie. So why would I want to look through the screen? I want to look at the screen.
That's absolutely the point. And I think this is somewhat to the conjecture of, you know, Samsung launched the frame and the art, those TVs which turn into, which becomes like a living room accessory. So if you put this TV in your living room, it looks like this translucent sheet of like, you know, metal and something. And
yeah, I guess if you have these foldable phones, if you have, I think people will adapt. I mean, you have a different kind of a crowd or different people with different tastes, or the kind of uber rich who have a lot of money to spend. So probably they may want something, you know, new each and every time. See, I think there's no point, you know, sort of poo-pooing these kind of newer technologies. It is just you have to see whether they stand the test of time. Because we have seen many such technologies come and go. Like you had these foldable, now you have some, you might come out with the rollable phones. Now you may ask me, why would I want to have a rollable phone if I have to each and every? But somebody may say, no, it's convenience. But it all depends, you know, I mean, how you look at technology, because somebody may find a use for it, probably that we have not even conceived it about. So.
Agreed. I would also say the same thing. I mean, the first reaction was, for what joy? Why? But I also realized that maybe, you know, in the future, probably in cars, you need a translucent sort of a screen in front of you where you're not getting distracted. You can look at certain things and you can also concentrate on the road. So I think that's where the use case is probably more apt. But
I don't think I'll agree with you of having a translucent or transparent TV in a car. But I guess.
I mean, not a TV, but like a screen.
They do have those.
Yeah,
small
they do.
Yeah, but I would rather have my eyes on the road unless I am in the back seat.
True.
But talking of cars, you know, Mercedes-Benz, along with the, you know, famed lead singer of Black Eyed Peas, will.i.am, they showcased something called Sound Drive, which is that when you're driving, if you're bored of music, you can remix and create your own music while driving. I don't know if we want to, you know, create songs while driving. I want to just, you know, reach wherever I'm going.
So what do they call it? A DJ on the go?
It's called Sound Drive. Sound is going to go and drive. So, and it's been marketed as a DJ on the go kind of thing. It's like, you know, you're bored of your Spotify playlist. So now let us make some music for you on the road. And it's starting with the Mercedes-Benz electric cars. It uses AI to recognize which song will go with which other song. And according to people who've tried it out, they're saying that it's interesting. But I don't know if I want to make songs while driving.
I would rather listen to podcasts while driving.
Marketing option.
Shameless plugin.
Yeah, and you have a bias, so that's very clear.
True.
No, I see. Again, I'll come to the very same point that you do not really know, you know, what are the kind of tastes of each other. See, one is like if you pack in too many features, like for instance, if you get a washing machine, I know there are some 50 features in my washing machine. I don't remember last using more than 2 or 3 features. So it's there and it comes at a basic price. So, you know, I mean, it's that, okay, fine. For 25,000, you get a washing machine without those features and you'll get a washing machine with those features. So might as well you think, okay, here's a good, you have struck a good bargain, so you buy it with the 50 feet. But whether you really use it, I'm not too sure. But sometimes you never know. Like if somebody wants to play if it's a real music lover, maybe they may want to mix and match or have AI mix and match it for them. So I'm not too sure.
You know, Leslie, there was this whole idea, another podcast I'm referring to, the CES podcast, and they said that AI will be the story of CES this year. Listening to you speak, that you use only three features in your washing machine. I think education should be the the main theme at some point of time. Why have there are so many features that people just don't know how to use in so many different kinds of products? And unless there is education in terms of consumers, for consumers, how are they to use any of these features? It's just gonna go waste. So at some point of time.
One is that, but secondly, first of all, just commenting on the CES and AI part, I think CES has woken up to AI just now. That's not really a good sign, because AI has been around for like at least seven, 8 years. At least we've been talking about AI, and AI has already matured. It's right. Generative AI that has been in the, been talked about for the last 1 year, and which has changed the face of AI and brought it to the masses as such. So consumer electronics show is actually a little late in the game as far as AI stuff. They're trying to make up with all of that. Well, that's okay. But speaking about the features part of it and educating people, I don't know. First of all, whether somebody wants to be educated on that, because as it is with every gadget that you get today, you will get a 50-page manual. I don't know where you want to read those manuals. I have never ever read. So I mean, just recently I thought of buying a cycle. So they asked me, okay, do you want a 1x9 gear? You want a 23x7 gear? You want a 50x6? I don't know. Basically, plenty of permutations and combinations. Being a little old school, I just said, I just want a bloody cycle. I want a cycle and I want to ride it. Now, can you just tell me, instead of telling me what size I require, what height I require, what frame I require, it was like literally I had, luckily because of my the bent for technology or the love for technology, I like to know about these things. So for me, the bias always is in understanding more about. So I sort of read up a lot on that, and more or less I understood, because I'm a biker, I'm right. Not a cyclist. So it took me some time to understand it, but yeah, it was not rocket science. But I realized, talking to some of the kids over there, the kids love that kind of talk.
Yes, so, yeah. Yes.
Because,
they do.
You know, they take up because they are born with this. So I think it's just a matter of, you know, sometimes it is how digitally inclined you are. It's not really much about age also, because I have been seeing parents of kids and all who talk the same language. So they're pretty okay with these 10,000 features being added. Sometimes they get frustrated. They do voice it. But yeah, I guess, you know, today you really don't have much of an option. They come with all those features. So what you want to do with it is up to you.
But when it comes to mass, right, you want the masses to be educated enough to be able to support technology in their lives.
So let me throw the question back to both of you, since you're not talking about education.
Sure.
Now, say you walk into a restaurant today, okay? You ask for the menu card. They have most of the top-end restaurants have dispensed with the menu card, okay, for whatever strange reason. If you're going to a very high fine dining restaurant or something, a very classy one, they might give you and those will be more like, those table books or those kind of coffee table books or something like that.
Yeah.
The menus will be that. And they'll be so heavy that you don't want to even hold them. Otherwise, you have to keep on handling a QR code. So there's a QR code for everything under the sun. Now, you have to take your camera, take your smartphone, click on it. You know, I personally feel it takes away the joy of eating. But some people just love that experience. So I don't know, you know, it all depends on how you look at life. It's a perspective, I guess. I would love to hear your thoughts on that, how you all look at it.
I feel it's a little impersonal, you know, when I go, whatever, to have a meal or to have a drink. And, you ask for the menu and they say you can just, you know, scan the QR and order it through that very page that loads. And you can also pay on that. And you essentially don't interact with the, you know, the restaurant staff at all. So I guess
it's like an IVR. You don't know why you're there. You don't know why you've come to that restaurant.
I truly appreciate it when I'm ordering food. you know, tech, all kinds of options. But to add to Shovik's point, sometimes the internet is not working properly in that area. So then what exactly. do you do? Maybe we should, but we should go back to CES because that's what we were discussing.
Dipti wanted, you wanted to ask something. You were very interested in something on the CES.
Yeah, I loved this whole idea about Alliance of Open USD. A, I obviously want to understand it better. And the other thing that, you know, they were talking about was the Formula One cars. There was this thing called the hypercar, right? It is, I think, RB17, the Red Bull hypercar. What is a hypercar, man? And how do...
You want to understand the metaverse thing first or the OSD, the USD part first, or you want to understand the other one part?
The USD part first and how it connects to hypercars, and also how is a hypercar different from a regular car? I know there are a lot of questions here. Whichever one you want to take up first, both of you.
So the USD is just the universal scene descriptor. So universal scene description, if I'm not mistaken.
That's
the full
USD.
Form of.
Huh.
Yeah. No. So basically the USD is known as a universal scene description. Hmm. Now that has been basically developed by Pixar, and it was the first open source software for collaboration. So basically what it does, it interchanges 3D scenes because there may be many formats. So you have sources, you have animations, etc. Now you're the content producer, so you know how it works.
Got it.
So if you want some open source collaboration, so this open source software actually fosters the collaboration part of it. Example is that of Toy Story 4, where millions of models, textures, lights, colors, etc., everything became possible because of this.
Finding Nemo as an example, right?
Yes. So that was because of the USD architecture.
Yeah.
And remember that Pixar is the very same company that Steve Jobs had acquired from George Lucas.
Yes.
So that
thank you for reminding us.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're talking about the Open USD, which is the AOUSD, what you are referring to, that is basically, again, what Pixar did is now introducing this to the world. So it has now it's made it open source. So this is the power of the open source now that you have. So basically it is to promote standardization, interoperability, development, evolution of this Pixar's Open USD. And it is being embraced now by industries beyond the film sector.
Right.
So you have architecture, engineering, construction, automotive, manufacturing, which explains why Roland Busch of Siemens is talking about it.
Yeah.
So it basically gives developers, it gives content unit creators the ability to broaden interoperability across content tools, data types, workflows, etc. That is basic the idea of OpenUSD.
Interesting. And Shovik, how does it tie into hyper cars and basically the entire auto segment?
So, the entire idea of a hypercar is there are the normal cars that we drive. And then there are the supercars, which are, the standard Ferraris and then the standard, McLarens and stuff. Then you have the hypercars, which are pretty much most of them are essentially at concept stages. They're meant to showcase a technology rather than be road legal.
Got it.
1,000 horsepower cars, which can reach 100 kilometers an hour in less than 1.5 seconds and things like that. The sort of crucial bit to developing these cars and these technologies is to there's a lot of wastage in terms of it becomes an expensive procedure to kind of create these cars because of how expensive the overall production process is. It requires a lot of mechanical parts, it requires a lot of experiments, and most important is safety, because when you're experimenting with combustion and when you're experimenting with mechanics, the entire development process becomes a very difficult, challenging procedure, which is where I think even the Alliance of OpenUSD, as well as virtual twins, which is something that Siemens spoke about at length during their CES presentation, is something. It's again, as Leslie mentioned, the CES is late to the AI party.
Yeah.
Digital twins, something that isn't new at all. In fact, it's been around for years. Siemens also showcased the
you know, the virtual reality headset, the mixed reality headset in partnership with Sony, which is going to help them, which they're going to pitch to manufacturers, where they can use it, you know, use digital twins in order to develop things. For instance, the Red Bull hypercar, which is going to be a part of Formula One going forward. So I think that's how it all kind of ties in. And that's where most of these developments stand. But Leslie, again, you would have seen digital twins being a thing since a while.
So before digital twins, of course, you're just talking about the hypercar. You said that, you know, it's in the concept stages. That is partly true because, you know, about 1% of all cars in the world are actually hypercars. So the word has been derived from a supercar. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're not all of them are concept stages, though, by the way. The first one, I was doing some research, was produced in 1963, the Lamborghini Miura.
Yeah.
It is known as the P400. So basically, the difference between an F1 car and a hypercar is that hypercars can accelerate faster than the F1 cars. So, which means that they can easily win in a drag race. Mm. So, and also hypercars are more road ready, whether, you know, F1 cars are more for the tracks. So I think that basically, and Jayant would have been the right person, you know, to explain this. But, you know, having said that, basically, just to give you listeners some idea, so the Lamborghini Miura can accelerate to 60 kilometers per hour in just about 6 seconds. And a top speed of 180 miles per hour. This is one of the newest hypercars on the market, which can go from 0 to 186 miles per hour, not kilometers per hour. So 186 by 8 point, multiply by 8 divided by 5, if you want the kilometers, in under 9 seconds.
Right.
So just get the number. Of course, you know, think of the cost. The cost of a Bugatti, which is a French hypercar, will be something like ranging between £1 million to £2.5 million.
So the gharbar bechne par bhi we won't be able.
Exactly. Are the Devo hypercar, which sold out in just one day, it cost about £4.7 million, not dollars. But coming back to the digital twin, which Souvik pointed out, basically creating, this gets me back to the whole Siemens topic of industrial metaverse. Now, typically, our listeners would also remember this, that anybody who has dabbled with virtual reality or augmented reality or mixed reality, which is a combination of both these, like using a headset and using data layering, etc., would remember a game like Second Life. So this is the Linden Lab, Second Life, where we used to have virtual avatars. That was quite a craze, you know, way back then. Now, that is more like a consumer metaverse.
Right.
Okay. But if we get back to, when we start talking about the industrial metaverse, then we have to remember kind of three concepts, which even Roland Busch actually outlined very well. First is, of course, the building blocks, what he calls. One is, of course, the digital twin itself, which is, you know, the chief building block that is based on physics. As I said, the laws of physics as we know them.
Then now, software-defined automation.
And then AI. Data and AI. Correct. So these are the three buildings. But when you talk about digital twins, what does it mean? Now, say if I want to create a smart city. Okay. So what do? I first try to create a replica of that, which you have seen. Like many, if you walk into any building now, if you want to buy an apartment or a house, they can't, you know, if it's under construction, you'll have a nice little replica out there. Okay.
Yeah.
They'll show you. Typically in India, they'll say, yahan se rasta jayega, yahan se gaadi jayegi, yahan par aap swimming karoge. You know, it's pretty interesting the way they try to describe. But, you know, most of the time you don't trust them because you know that what you see is not what you get. So that WYSIWYG is not applicable to most builders out here in India, at least.
Right.
So here in a digital twin concept, if you are trying to create a digital twin of a factory, for instance, or a digital twin of a smart city, you can actually create a replica of exactly what you want. Now, that is the beauty of it. And then you use the software-defined automation, basically, whether it is the, you know, the AO USD that we spoke about or whatever. And then that marries the real world with the metaverse, the digital world.
Yeah, and just to go back to that translucent screens wala part, right? When he was describing software-defined automation, it was quite literally they were using those screens to actually then manipulate the digital twin organically. So that yeah. was another. I think that would have been a better use case instead of a TV. How shall we?
But I think everybody has said, even before metaverse became a buzzword people started trying to create bank metaverse experiences and all, I think the entire idea behind mixed reality experiences was that it would be of great use in industries, in especially in healthcare, for instance, trying to analyze brain models, trying to analyze cardiac models. That's where many people have been speaking for, you know, a good part of 4 or 5 years now. That in fact, Dassault, I remember I spoken to them about a couple of years ago. Dassault does a lot of work on digital twins, and they work with hospitals too, and they all use these translucent screens, they all use these mixed reality headsets to try and get access to like a very convincing digital twin of a heart to understand how a stent placement may or may not, you know, help in the longevity of life of a patient. And I think that's the sort of real use case of metaverse.
No, I would disagree out here. That's not the real. I mean, there are many other real use cases, because I think we are conveniently forgetting the fact that your airplanes, for instance, have always been running on autopilots. Okay,
right.
Your first autopilot, before we spoke about the driverless cars also, your first autopilot was somewhere way back in 1912. I mean, most people can just completely forget that, you know.
You know, so Leslie loves this example of airplanes. He's given it so many times in AI Rising.
But it is a fact, you know, because we tend to think that everything has just sprung out of thin air. Nobody's a magician. Like I always say, AI itself is a 60-year-old concept, you know. Machine learning itself has been around for about 40, 45 years. Augmented reality by Ivan Sutherland is almost like 40 years, okay? So all these technologies always existed, virtual reality, augmented reality. Now we call it mixed reality because we're building both the physical world,
bringing everything together.
Yeah. So it's clearly an enhancement of these technologies. And, you know, because software has become, much more complex, and the algorithms have become better, you have more computing power. See, we should never forget that. Today, the computing power is what enables all this stuff. How do you think it will happen? Because you have your GPUs riding it, no? At the end of the day. You have your GPUs, you have combinations of GPUs and CPUs.
Yeah.
And that is exactly. Look at gamers. Now, Shaumik and all have been hardcore gamers. I was a gamer at one point in time. Now, of course, I don't do as much gaming. But remember, we all worked with the GPUs.
Yes,
so there's nothing. Yeah, now it's back in the GPUs are back in the news with AI. It doesn't mean that they did not exist. So the users, as you see, are, the use cases keep on developing. So you were talking about healthcare, Shaumik, which is fine. But remember that the auto industry and all have been using it.
The
aviation sector, clearly. Because I think the key operative word here is immersive learning or immersive teaching. Because you could do remote, you could have a car remotely sort of, a mechanic could work on a car remotely and make it okay. You could repair the car over there, which is what happens on the shop floor. If there's a break-in and some oil kind of rig out there, you're not going to go physically out there. So many of these guys do it because everything is, shop floor to the boardroom.
Right.
And this, Dipti, I remember you were asking about PLCs, etc.
Yes.
These are all your CNCs, which are the computer numerical controlled machines, they use PLCs as the software defined automation layers.
Yeah.
So these are very, they all existed on the shop floor. Like before we had 3D printing, we had rapid prototyping. We still have rapid prototyping. And
you know, PLC in terms of science fiction, it just kind of reminds me of Ender's Game. They send out... and the same concept has been applied in Guardians of Galaxy Volume 3, where there was this one civilization that goes that sends out all of the drones, and all of the drones are operated from a central space far, far away from the main fight. Right, so yeah, it. I mean, well, I'm a content freak, so there you go, Leslie, just steering everything to content.
Yeah, but then your Star Wars also came from George Lucas.
Correct.
And Pixar acquired George Lucas's company. So the concepts are always there.
Shavik, you were wanting to say something.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, talking about merging, you know, the physical and virtual worlds, and you know, this entire idea of being present at a faraway location and controlling something that's at a different location. Talking of that, at CES 2024, this startup named HoloConnects has presented hologram boxes. They're like these refrigerator-like boxes where they are going to, you know, they essentially pitched it like, you know, you can teleport a person from 5,000 miles away right into that box, and you can have like an absolutely natural conversation with this person, as long as your internet connection doesn't have very high latency and it doesn't lag. Holograms is something that came up in this, and they've presented multiple use cases. They've said that, you know, in cases of, you know, family emergencies, if a person can't be present, you can have this box present in a hospital room, and you know, a person from a land far, far away can just magically appear inside this box and have a natural conversation with their parent. I think it's cool because, you know, from the video demo which I saw of it, it at least, you know, in a controlled environment, it looks really cool, and it looks like the person's right there in front of you. The person demoing it claims to be some 3,000 miles away or something.
Yeah, and Shavik, at the end of the day, you have to... I mean, I think one fact that we all have to realize that these technologies, whether they will come in the next 2 years or next 20 years or next 200 years, they are going to come.
Right.
You know, we will have them. So clearly, we have already reached the inflection point, and now it is just a matter of fine-tuning all these things. Like, say, we complain about bandwidth, but we have 5G. It's not that... So these are things that can be remedied. The point is, like, what I like about Consumer Electronics Show or any of these events, it shows the confluence of all these, the convergence and the confluence of all these technologies. Now, look at the technologies that are involved. It's virtual reality, it is augmented reality, it is mixed reality, it is your 5G, it is your Internet of Things. So just look at the amount of technologies, then your software-defined automation, your digital twin, everything, you know, gets tied up. It's like a seamless kind of thing. And then you just like literally like from a magician's hat, you say, okay, abracadabra, and you actually, yes, there's tremendous amount of work that goes at the background. And that right. is what people seldom appreciate when they see the final product, you know.
True.
Right. But perhaps, you know, we should talk about some of the fun, quirky things. Like you mentioned, all of these technologies will be there with us at some point in front of us. There's also this mirror that's been launched at CES. It's been showcased. I think you can buy it for some $300 in the US. But it's a mirror which is going to look at you in the morning, and it's going to ask you how you're feeling. And based on how you're feeling, it's going to make you feel better. Feel even better.
Please, yeah.
Dipti, you need it?
No.
We have a talking mirror now.
Mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's the fairest of them all?
Wow, we have a talking mirror. I thought in the morning I just like my meditation. I would like to remain quiet.
No, I don't want this mirror in my life. Just like I don't want 100 other mental health apps in my life that claim to understand human's psyche, but they don't actually do that. So I don't really want this mirror, just like I don't want those mental health apps. They need
Dipti, again, then we go back to a matter of choice, right? because our listeners would be so varied.
Yeah.
Somebody would like say, what the hell, which world are these guys belonging to? You know, I would love that mirror.
So correct. For, I mean,
somebody would want that mirror and say, okay, whether you're
and no willing, judgment there, but I'm just saying there are people like me correct. Who might not want it.
Yeah, I don't know. For me, the problem is shelling out that $300 on it. So
I might as well spend it on therapy, no?
God. You've now ventured into a completely different territory.
I know.
See,
absolutely.
This is
I
what happens with us, Shaubik. Best of luck to you.
A segue for this also into CES. If you consider spending $300 for therapy, instead of that, you can spend $500 for Samsung's Bolly robot.
Oh, yes.
A personal companion and a projector which can turn into a TV whenever you want it to be. That's a very cool.
Yeah.
You know, your puppy turns into a projector and you can see shows thanks to the puppy.
You know, Wall-E is so cute, and it just reminded me of the movie Wall-E. For it is so cute. It looks so like I could just, if it had cheeks, I could just pull them.
It looks like the beep from Star Wars.
Oh yeah, it does. You're right. But again, that's a companion, right? And it connects all of the technology, all of the home appliances that you have from Samsung into like, you know, together. So it's a great companion, I'm sure. But I still
but
need
my dog,
my parents, family.
I'm saying a physical dog cannot be hacked, no? What happens with this guy?
Then so if robbers will find hacked, another way to rob your homes through Wall-E.
Because you would have connected all the other gadgets with it, and then of course some would have also connected their pacemakers with that.
Oh, that so, you know, would be dangerous.
So sometimes I'm just saying that we have to just be wary of the fact that, you know, too many connected devices may not be the right recipe till they get the cyber security in place.
I mean, no, Leslie, you're absolutely right. I think this, the cybersecurity threat thing with related to when it comes to smart appliances is very real. And I think once, at least twice or thrice every month, you know, each of these cybersecurity firms send out these advisories and press notes and blogs and stuff on, you know, X million unprotected, you know, wrongly configured smart devices were left open, which led to some 500,000 passwords being exposed on the internet, and personal health data being scraped from cloud platforms and cloud storage platforms. That remains to be a pretty clear threat to.
And there could actually be ransomware attacks. No, my only point is, you know, the ransomware attacks, if they get into all these connected devices, you know, sort of shudder at the thought of having so many connected devices. So I would be a little wary about, you know, jumping into these things till there's some maturity on the devices. So it's nice to have it's like, you know, I always liken them, and you may have a different perspective on this, but I like to liken them. If you look at the MTV fashion shows or any of these, you will see a very different kind of wardrobe being shown. Okay. You sometimes wonder why exactly is somebody even showing that stuff? But then they are like very much at the products that are being shown at the CES. So not every product has to get into the market. Not every product has a utility value. Not every thing. But I think the idea behind some of these products, the idea behind some of these technologies is amazing.
Just to interject over there, L'Oreal is one of the part of her keynote speeches in CES, and I was just wondering, I mean, I'm sure the beauty industry is like, you won't put two and two together with beauty industry and
beauty and tech have always been going together. No, historically also. So a lot of these products, Shaubik will be able to tell you a lot.
Tell me more.
Yeah,
very interesting that you brought this up. In 2015 or 2016, this Indian smartphone maker, this smartphone brand Carbon, had launched very, I don't think it sold at all. This phone was called Carbon Fashion I. And I remember this because they had sent it to me to test the phone. And the entire idea was this tiny little budget smartphone, which, by the way, were not like phones of today.
Hmm.
Today, if you buy a less priced smartphone, that's pretty acceptable. But back then, you would see like the phones would stutter, it would struggle to open basic applications. But Carbon had launched a 6,000 rupee phone, which their claim was you could point it to any piece of garment, and they had partnered with Flipkart or Jabong or Myntra or one of them. So you could point it at any piece of clothing you would see when you're out and about, and it would scan that jacket next to you and it'll tell you what jacket it is and where you can buy it. And yeah, I think a lot of people have been trying to do it now. If you know, Lenskart is one such popular option where if you go on Lenskart and if you want to try out sunglasses or if you want to buy a new pair of spectacles.
But that becomes like an e-commerce sort of a strategy, right? It becomes a part of the marketing strategy. I'm talking about the main product. Like, how would tech help in building main beauty products? That is my question.
When you look at, for instance, all these fashion shows, things that are presented, there's of course yet again, you know, digital twins and mixed reality comes in there, where you can try out new designs, see which texture looks, how it looks in different lighting conditions. Mm. And you know, when it comes to beauty products, I'm really not an expert in it, but I would assume that, you know, there are multiple ways in which you know, artificial intelligence is utilized in seeing which kind of compositions make sense commercially and what kind of products have really worked historically in the industry.
Yeah, I think L'Oreal has been using both science and technology. So it's just not technology.
Mm.
Because if you look at much of the skincare products and all, today you have like gene editing tools, you have a whole thing on biotechnology, you have a lot of this. So skincare, for instance, is very important for a company like L'Oreal, for instance. Mm. So they would be, and even in their manufacturing processes, for instance, they would be using augmented reality, virtual reality, immersive technologies, etc. So they have been speaking about both. And if you, as far as I recall, L'Oreal has always been talking about being at the forefront of science and technology. So from that, you know, it's very surprising because, as you said, many of these companies today cannot divorce themselves from science and tech. So every company today talks about science and technology and will find some link out there and get, and many of them are actually very sincere about it. So they're doing a lot of stuff. So clearly, a company like L'Oreal has a lot to do with biotechnology, has a lot to do with skincare technology. I think one will just have to, you know, just read up a little more on that stuff. And we can talk as we go forward on the
next few episodes.
It's a topic worth exploring. And probably get a beauty and skincare expert also.
Oh, that would be so much fun. I think I just had this one last question regarding sustainability. How is then, I mean, with recyclable plastic and God knows what all that they're claiming, will sustainability actually be a part of, you know, technology going forward?
It's already there. No? I mean, science and technology is very much part of sustainability. Like, talking about sustainability in today's context, anything for that matter of fact, whether you take a simple thing like flood forecasting or you take a simple of understanding the weather forecast. Now, you have a weather app, right?
Mm.
Okay. How does that work? That works with Doppler's. Now, how do you get Doppler's is all about science and technology.
Science and technology,
like,
correct.
Shovik loves to talking about space tech. Now, without the satellites, how are you even? You won't even understand.
I'm talking about the waste.
Yeah.
Waste.
So even eliminating waste and all that kind of stuff. Now, so one is it creates waste, and then you use AI and other kind of technologies to eliminate waste. So for climate change, for flood forecasting and all, you can use AI because you understand the patterns. And you can make predictions based on them. And then you can inform you.
And even in consumer technology, you know, I think in September or October, whenever Apple holds their launch event, this year they spoke about collecting all the e-waste that they generate from older products. And they mashed it up, put it inside a robot and brought out these processed rubber sheets, which they used to create these Apple Watch straps.
Mm-hmm.
And it's become a cool thing because they partnered with Nike to market it. And the entire pitch behind marketing is that since they were recycled, it actually uses, you know, different color specs of whatever different material they have collected.
Right.
Every band is unique because no pattern is the same on any of them. I think that's one way of in which, and pretty much all companies are talking about sustainability and e-waste and
They are. I think we should.
We should probably resurrect the idea of having the Raddiwalas come back, you know, the scrap collectors.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people would like to donate the scrap. Like I have 10,000 wires out here, lying out here. And so every household, for that matter of fact, has so many wires lying around, so many old gadgets. We do not know what to do with it. Sometimes you can use a particular gadget as a camera or something, you know, you can reuse it, but that you have to be a little more tech savvy to be able to do those things. But if you can't, then what? Can it be collected? Can it be reused? Can your old laptop be donated to some school? I think some sort of formal mechanism is something that we probably companies ought to invest in that from a sustainability point of view.
You know, this calls for a separate episode as well. This is a very interesting topic.
We should talk about e-waste separately. I think it's extremely important.
Well, on that note, we are going to bring to an end the first episode of 2024. As you can see, we are very invested in technology, and we also like to jump into each other's statements and divert the conversation into new things that we had pending on our to-do list.
So folks, that's it for this episode. You are listening to Mint Tech Cetera. You can reach out to us on LinkedIn if you have any questions. Our handles are in the description.
This episode was produced by me, Deepthi Ahuja. It was edited by Amrinder Singh. Catch you next week.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HT Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.htsmartcast.com.